Country Life on Midlands 103. Brought to you by W. Orshaw Burlington Business Park Tullamore, supplier of New Holland's tractors in the Midlands. WORshaw.ie.
Now, good evening and welcome to Country Life here on Midlands 103. It's MJ Cleary with you for the next hour, bringing you the latest from the Midlands and further afield from the worlds of food, farming and agribusiness. Now, thank you all for joining me. And it is a week since I was speaking to you last. We are 6th of March now, and the weather is the big one on all farmers' minds at the moment. Temperatures definitely have seen an increase in the last few days since the end of last week. Now, Monday night was a horrendous night. Stormy conditions almost with the amount of rain that fell. It is given drier later in the week and into next week, which would be super. We're just looking for a dry spell now and temperatures in double figures for a sustained period of time. So fingers crossed that's what we get. Now, the show this week, and in a moment I'll be speaking to John Murphy. He is the Environment Chair of the IFA and he has news on changes in relation to nitrates for 2024. Some important changes have been made. Also a word on a High Court action today on the same topic. We'll chat about that in just a moment. Also this evening, a Westmead farmer is involved in a national show. And before you think it's not the Tullamore show, it's the, wait for it, National Alpaca Show. Takes place this weekend in Mullingar. Paul O'Brennan has over 100 head of alpaca and he'll be chatting us all about his herd and the upcoming show. That promises to be a huge event this weekend. It's over 2 days and some really interesting pieces in it, and it's going to attract people from not only Ireland but also abroad. You may think they are a hobby, but unlike sheep, their wool is extremely valuable. And the potential of an Irish alpaca tweed is now on the horizon for breeders. So more on that later. You would need to be living under a rock over the last probably about year, 18 months, to be unaware of the amount of young Irish people who are moving to Australia at the moment. Cost of living, wages and of course the weather are all driving factors. But the figures are eye-watering. Sarah McIntosh from Irish Farmers Journal joins me later to chat about how over 20,000 Irish citizens were granted working visas in Ireland, in Australia, I should say, last year. And how, obviously enough, this is having a huge knock-on effect with labour availability, especially in the agri sector. Chagas launched their crop report platform today. It combines the most up-to-date field observations with the latest scientific trial results to give management strategies for all major crops in Ireland. Michael Hennessy will chat on how this tool can help you as a tillage farmer this year. Now, as always, text me or WhatsApp me on 083 3010 103. And as I said, going to start the programme this evening with Environment Chair from the IFA, and that's John Murphy. John, many thanks for taking my call.
Well, yeah, thank you. No bother, yeah.
John, we were dealing with Paul O'Brien as Environment Chair for the last period of time on the programme. So before we kick into the issues, you've recently taken up the position. Can you just give listeners here a little bit of background on who you are and where you're from, John, please?
Okay, I took up the position at the AGM this year in January from Paul O'Brien, as you said. I'm based here in Cork. I'm a dairy and beef farmer. I suppose I've been involved in IFA for the last 20, 25 years. I've been on the Environmental Committee for 5 years. I have been on the Dairy Committee and the Farm Business Committee. And been involved at county level, so I've been at this a while, you know. So yeah. I'm looking forward to this challenge. You know, it's definitely a challenging time and environment.
Yeah, well, it's without doubt one of the biggest national chairs now, John. Considering the climate, for want of a better word, considering the environment we're in at the moment and all of these issues. We're going to start off with nitrates. That's what we're speaking about for the next 3 or 4 minutes here. There was a High Court judgment today and it was again on the topic of nitrates. It involved Antashka and the IFA had a little bit of reaction to it. Do you want to just give us a bit of background on that, please, John?
Yeah, just a little background. I suppose maybe over a year ago, Antashka took the Department of Housing and Local Authority to court, seeking a judicial review of the NAP, which is a national, or the Nitrates Action Plan, which underpins the irrigation. So IFA requested to become a notice party, and we put up a defence of it. So the case went on in the autumn, and the judgment came in today. Basically, the programme stands. A lot of the issues are going to be referred on further for more court adjudication. And our President, Fancy Gormley, put out a statement today welcoming the fact that the Nitrates Action Plan stands, which underpins the irrigation. And he's suggesting maybe that we should try and sit down in Tashka and see can we work these things out. He thanked the people involved and said, look, we will take it from here and we'll see what happens. The judgment is extremely long. It's 120 pages or so. So there's a lot of getting reading in it. Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I just see on the press release, Francie says at the bottom, I'll be asking on Tashka to sit down with the IFA to have a rational discussion about these issues. The courtroom is not a place to set policy, he concluded. And in fairness, look, hard to argue with that if you can have people around the table and chatting as opposed to a 120-page High Court judgment. But on nitrates, John, there has been some changes and some interesting ones and some that farmers may not be aware of. Three kind of big ones. So we'll kick off, we'll chat about them. First one being the reduction by 5%.
Okay, I suppose basically the there's a review of the Nitrogen Action Plan again this year, and this water quality group that was set up by the Minister has been meeting, and then the Nitrogen Expert Group as well, so it's all feeding in together. And the Minister announced last week a number of changes. I suppose the simplest one is artificial fertilisers to be reduced by a further 5%, following on from the 10% that was reduced in 2022. This reduction will only apply to farmers who are farming over 170 kilos of organic nitrogen per hectare, and it won't apply to any tillage, and it won't also apply to anyone who has no stock and grows silage or hay on their farms. So that's the first part of it.
And that's just on that one, John. So we are down to 190 kilos
of artificial nitrogen per hectare, yeah, on derogation farms. Now there is a sliding scale, and they have made a new category under 80 kilos of organic nitrogen per hectare. So it is taking cognizance of not reducing the nitrogen loading for people on lower stocking rates, because they need the amount they have, and it's felt that the risk is smaller there, you know.
Yeah, very good.
That's an important one.
Yeah, moving on to the next one.
And the way the organic N is calculated for animals is changing a small bit. The first one, I suppose, the big one is calves. The old system was that an animal from 1 to 2 years old was classed as 2 kilos per month. So that was 24 kilos for the whole year. Now the calf in the first 3 months of its life will be classed as only 1 kilo. So that's a change down from 6 kilos to 1 kilo of organic N being secreted. And then for the rest of its of that 12-month period, the organic excretion is going from 18 up to 20. So there's actually a gain there of about 3 kilos in total. So that's in recognition, I suppose, that we're encouraging more dairy farmers to keep the calf longer and present a better calf for sale. And we don't want them to be disadvantaged in the calculations. And also the fact that there's been trial work done on it by Tagus. It's been peer reviewed by Lions Estate and UCD. And the science tells us that the excretion rate from baby calves up to 3 months is very, very small. That's a positive move.
Absolutely, John. You took the words out of my mouth. Not too often you say it, but it's reasonable and it's sensible.
Yeah. And all these measures that I'm talking about are going to kick in for this year. So they're going to be retrospective back to the 1st of January. And that's an important thing in recognition of the difficulty guys have had from going back from 250 to 220. So I suppose there is a recognition of the hardship and the risk to farmers' businesses having to go back from 250 to 220. So there's another change then as well in the 1 to 2 year olds. They have divided up the excretion rate between males and females. And this is an important one as well, particularly for dairy farmers when they have female replacements. The female is going from 57 down to 55. So there's a gain of 2 kilos of nitrogen per kilos of nitrogen secreted. And the male is going from 57 up to 61. So that's basically we're just following the science here. They've done a lot of work on this over the last 2 to 3 years, and the science tells us that these animals, the females, are smaller and they have less nitrogen being secreted. So that's another slight gain for farmers.
That's reasonable again, John. And I suppose,
reasonable, yeah.
Yeah, when you're looking at it, it's you'd look at it and you'd see a heifer, she's lighter. It's not going to be as bulky as a bull. And that sounds. Sounds good. Like two, the second and the third, you both said there are ones where you would go, there's actually a little bit of thinking here done on the ground, and they're seeing what's actually happening on farms.
Exactly. And then the other thing that's happening is that there's been a lot of work done on looking at the crude protein of the diet of animals. So the lower the crude protein in the animal's diet, the less nitrogen they excrete. So that's kind of proven at this stage. So there is a voluntary measure that people can take on board this year. If they can reduce their overall average ration percentage crude protein, there's a sliding scale. The baseline is 15%, and anything under 15, there's a gain for excretion rates on the animals that are being fed. So that's a voluntary measure, and it's the average of the whole year. The legislation as such is that you must feed a 15% protein or less at grass for the summer. That's in the legislation already. But this now is an additional voluntary measure that if you can go under 15%, you will get a gain on less excretion rates. So that's another attempt to help farmers over the line here. And it's going to be based on this year's meal feeding. Normally, these issues are retrospective to the previous year. Your nitrogen usage and your meal usage is usually from the previous years taken to calculate the current year. This now is a change that this year, in order to get this thing up and running as quickly as possible, they're going to accept the documentation from the year 2024. So I suppose the disadvantage for farmers is that it's harder to plan because you're not 100% sure where you're going to be in maybe June, July, August, September with the ration. But like you feel people will have to just take a more proactive view of it and working out their calculation in real time, you know.
Finally, so
that's another good thing.
Yes, absolutely, John. Finally, one which is going to be more of an issue for farmers, and this comes down to the reporting of slurry movement. So,
yes.
Look, we're used to slurry being moved from farm to farm, and a reporting has to be done by year end. But there is a change here. Has this been set in stone yet, John, or has this been mooted?
No. We look. It's not set in stone yet. There is a meeting tomorrow with the Department of Agriculture and the Pigs Committee. The Pig Committee feel the time frame, and we feel the time frame is too tight. The Minister came out with a 4-day time frame that you must report on ag.ie within 4 days of the movement. We had a submission that suggested 7 days. So that's where our position is. And I suppose just on a general thing, there is no new regulations here. The regulations around slurry importing and exporting are the exact same. It's just that the reporting mechanism is tightening up. And I suppose the reason for the tightening up is that they want to have more cross-compliance and inspections of movement of slurry to verify it. And I suppose, you know, if you're notifying someone of a slurry movement that happened 6 months ago, it is virtually impossible to check to see that it happened. So, look, while we understand and we get it that people will have a concern about this and using computers and trying to get it done and asking agents and target advisors and stuff, we think the 4 days is too tight. We think 7 might be more appropriate. But this thing is going to be brought in some shape or form, and it's going to be for the current year.
Very good, John. We'll leave it there. And I'm going to say many thanks for running down through all of those areas. We will speak to you again on the programme. Thanks, John.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
John Murphy there, Environment Chair of the IFA, and some changes there that will affect people. Look, mainly the calves going from 0 to 3 months being down to just 1 kilo of nitrogen for those first 3 months. That's going to be a big one for dairy farmers who keep calves up to maybe 8-10 weeks. Not going to be as big a push to get them out the door. The other big one is the fact that slurry movements will now have to be reported within. Look, it's going to be either 4 days or 7 days, either or. It means that inspections are going to be occurring as a result of slurry movements. So slurry movements won't be reported by the end of the year. This is going to be a big one. It's going to be a big burden on the paperwork side of things for farmers, and also means there's going to be phone calls or officials from the department knocking on the door. And if slurry has been reported to have been moved into your holding, they may wish to see where that slurry was spread. So big changes there. Now, coming up after the break, going to be speaking to Michael Hennessy from Chagas about their new crop report platform. So stay tuned for that.
Country Life on Midlands 103. Brought to you by W. Orshaw, Burlington Business Park, Tullamore. Supplier of New Holland's tractors in the Midlands. worshaw.ie.
And you're welcome back to Country Life here on Midlands 103. Now moving on to tillage, and Michael Hennessy from Chagas is joining me. Michael, many thanks for taking my call this evening.
No problem.
Michael, today you launched the Crop Report platform. So let's, I suppose, rewind back. This is something you've been doing a long time, and let's break it down for people who may not be familiar with this area at all. What exactly is your Crop Report, firstly? And then secondly, what's the Crop Report platform?
Yeah, so the Crop Report is it's basically a compendium or a collection, if you like, of all the latest research combined with strategies that whether it's agronomists or farmers can put in place to grow the best crops that they can. So it kind of puts it all together in a really usable format. And what we've done is over the last number of years is we've kind of brought it from a paper-based scenario into a digital-based platform so that people can look at it on the web, but they can also, and we've developed a couple of apps, one for Android and one for Apple. They can actually download it onto their phones and they can use it out and about, and then it becomes really practical for farmers to reference that information and look at the, you know, what am I going to do next? And that's exactly what the Crop Report does for them.
And the info then that's collated in your Crop Report, is it solely from Chagas Research Farms? Is it from Farmers Farms? Or how do you get all the info together?
So I suppose it's based upon good research from Ireland for in the most part. Now we do where we don't, where we fill in gaps, I suppose we will take stuff from the UK or Scotland. So it's similar climates, if you like, in terms of some thresholds for various different pests and that. But primarily the scenarios are based on, I suppose, long-term experience mixed in with recent trial results and the best of the implementation of how it can actually be put on the ground. So it's stuff that really works, I suppose, on the ground. And I suppose that's all mixed in with our constant observations, you know, every 2 weeks from around the country. So it gives farmers, not only farmers and agronomists, not only, you know, a view of what to do in a routine scenario, but also what's coming at them as well in terms of the year in question.
Yeah, well, that was kind of my next question. I'm going to say, look, as a tillage farmer, how does it help you? But you've essentially answered it there. I'm just seeing a quote here on the press release. Larry Doyle, a tillage farmer in Carlow, he says, "The report has all the information I want, including extensive product information, which allows me not only to work out what to use, but also to complete cost comparisons on specific management strategies." So it's just giving you a lot of data and it's allowing you to make a more concerted decision on the issues that are in front of you.
Yeah, you see, I suppose the thing about it is in tillage farming, there's some, you know, we use herbicides and we use fungicides and various different fertilizers and so on and so forth. But there's very similar types of products on the market. So you might have a product that has two active ingredients and a product beside it that might have almost exactly the same active ingredients in it, but in a different ratio. So what we do is we collate all of these products, these plant protection products, together, and we put them in really usable and user-friendly and easy-to-find tables, such as herbicides for spring wheat. We'll divide that then out, maybe herbicides for winter wheat or herbicides for oilseed rape. And what we'll do is we'll give the full rundown or details of that particular herbicide, but also insert our expert comments, stuff that you wouldn't see on the can. You know, where to use this in what particular circumstance and how you use this in a strategy of, say, weed control or fungicide control for that particular crop. So it kind of brings it all together, and it's the expertise we bring within that crop report. So a farmer then can actually really see all of the complex data, see through all of the complex data. There are some prices there, if you like, on it, and they can do a bit of cost comparison between the various different products so they can come up with the best strategy that suits them for the crop that they have in front of them.
Yeah, the people who this may really work well for, Michael, I remember years ago with a small bit of tillage on the farm, and look, not really tillage farmers, but it was a little bit here and there, and you'd go and you'd be advised on a few sprays or whatever, and you didn't know what any of them were or what this, you know, what they were sure for, and you just basically were going on, okay, we'll just go with these. So if you had a tool like this, you could actually go look at them, see what you're advised, see what they're for, and it would give you just a little bit more knowledge on an area that is very vast.
Certainly give you a bit of a steer. And look, I suppose from the point of view of this crop report, primarily we are writing this for agronomists, for people advising farmers to a degree. And that's not to say that farmers who have and probably need a bit of an idea about tillage, that they wouldn't be able to look down through that and make their own decisions as well. But I suppose from the point of view of having the good fundamentals in terms of how you go about managing a crop, it certainly has all of that in a section we call our reference dials. So we've a reference document for spring barley, reference document for growing maize, and I suppose even for people who are maybe in broader scale of things, we do a good bit of stuff on forage crops and also on grasslands as well in terms of how to control some weeds and that. So we cover a very large plethora of crops, I suppose, all the way across that will be grown in Ireland.
Tillage farmers, Michael, look, we're the, 6th of March now. I know the old adage was getting a crop in the ground by Paddy's Day was an ideal. Realistically, the way ground conditions are now, unless a miracle happens next week, not going to occur. But what are we? Are we hopeful for the end of March? What are farmers saying to you?
Oh God, ever hopeful for sure. Yeah, look, I mean, the ground conditions are very poor out there still, and any kind of wet ground is still extremely wet. But look, I suppose we're not talking about we're in October, November, heading into a poorer time. 2 or 3 days of very good drying conditions in March can make a massive difference on the ground. But look, it's certainly if it stopped raining today, we're probably still 5 or 6 days out from people in the lighter land being set and ready to go, and in the heavier land it'll be a bit longer than that. So look, we're ever hopeful that the weather will actually take up, and you know, the equipment and machinery that people have out there, once they're geared up, and that'd be the big message I would say, look, this is going to be a bit of a sprint. Make sure that you have your fertilizer ready to go, you have your seed ready to go, and there's no coming and going and trying to get at or waiting for anything, and there could be some delays this year if you're waiting for somebody to deliver it to you. Have it all ready to go. As soon as the weather is right, then belt away at it. And it's amazing what work will get done within a week or two.
Yeah, very good. Michael, many thanks for joining me and give us a rundown on that. We will speak to you again on the programme.
No problem. Thank you.
Michael Hennessy there from Chagas. And it is the Crop Report platform. And there's an app available if you pop it into your Google or your Google Play Store or Apple. Wherever you get your apps, it will pop up, Chagas Crop Report platform. And as I said, definitively will give you knowledge on certain areas. And I like the cost comparison part as well, because look, it's not the name of the game when it comes to all areas of agriculture. Now, coming up after the break, Paul O'Brennan is going to be talking about the National Alpaca Show, which is taking place in County Westmeath. And if you thought alpacas are just a hobby, pet farm animals, then you're incorrect. Massive, massive area, and there are a huge amount of people breeding them in Ireland and indeed abroad, and it's a real growth area, and there's a very interesting aspect to it, and that is the concept of alpaca tweed, Irish alpaca tweed, something Paul's going to be talking about now in just a moment, so stay tuned.
Country Life on Midlands 103, brought to you by W. Orshaw Burlington Business Park Tullamore, supplier of New Holland's tractors in the Midlands, worshaw.ie.
And you're very welcome back to Country Life here on Midlands 103. And as I said before the break, we are moving on to the area of alpacas. And we have a man who knows a lot about this area. That's Paul O'Brennan, and he's farming in County Westmeath. Paul, many thanks for taking my call this evening.
Thank you. No problem at all. Good to talk to you.
Well, we're going to talk about this big event taking place this weekend in Mullingar, the National Alpaca Show. We'll chat about that in a moment. But first, a little bit about yourself, Paul. Not every week I have someone on the programme who is breeding alpacas to your level. You're big into them. How in God's name did you get into this area of agriculture? Tell us.
Total accident. I was building for many years, and I was asked to build a one-off house, which I normally wouldn't do. And long story short, the family I was building for had sold a lot of land, but they had some land and they forestated it. They planted 40 acres roughly they had, and they had to keep an element of it that had electricity wires going through it clear. So they wanted something to graze it. They had donkeys. They weren't really that interested in donkeys anymore. And they asked me about alpacas. I said I'd never even heard about them. I went home and I saw they were in the Tullamore show in 2012. And I said, look, I'm going down. And I brought this elderly gentleman down to have a look at this when I was bringing the kids down. And we watched for 4 or 5 hours, Tim Hay, an Australian guy, international judge, who happens to be coming this weekend again. So 12 years later, he's back here. And we watched that. We got really interested. And the rest is history. We were suddenly over in the UK, bought some females, a stud male, some pet males to keep the stud male company because you never mix them. And we've been breeding them since that. And everything has been going very, very well ever since.
And who is your marketer? Look, there's probably been more, there's more of a market now because you see them around, there's pet farms and there's people interested in them. But back maybe 10, 12 years ago, when you said you were bringing these over, were you taking, you were taking a punt, obviously, but what did you have in your head as to potential purchasers?
Well, we saw some breeders in the Tullamore show and we heard of a few more around the country. And first off, they were a very interesting animal. And so it was... Yeah, we take a punt, but we knew there was a market. But pets at that stage would go for, you know, 400-600 euro, and females would have gone from anything from 2,500 to 3,500 at that time. But the wool was interesting. The whole new concept of farming was interesting. We realized very quickly they were very easy animals to handle, to treat, to dose. Easier than sheep, no hoofs, no, they're just toenails, soft pad, nothing really strenuous about them. They weren't trying to escape. They had falsely been accused of being constant spitters. They don't spit that much. They can, when a female's pregnant, she'll spit at a male, but that's about it. The lamb is the one that spits. So there were people buying them just as pets, as grazers. There was farmers taking some for protect sheep and fowl. And there was a small number of people wanting to do what we just did, buy some females and see how it went.
So the breeding aspect of them then, were well used to sheep here in the Midlands, obviously in County Westmeath, a great sheep county. And we know lambs go for meat. And alpacas, people will ask, so what do we do with them? Do we eat them?
You can, but it'd be a very expensive steak. They're bred for the fleece, and that's it. It's the quality of the fleece. So even on the show at the weekend, on Saturday, it'll be a judging element of the show. 60% of the points go for the fleece, the quality of the fleece, the handle, the crimp, the fineness, the micron on it. And 40% goes for the conformation of the animal. So a good, sturdy animal with like one-third head and neck, one-third body, one-third legs. You know, the look of the animal, good head type, good straight tabletop back, you know, walking correctly, all of that. The jawline, eyes should be all both brown, not blue. So those elements, that's how they're judged on.
Yeah, there's a big big shopping list for it. And I don't mean it in any way, but what's so special about the fleece? As in, there obviously is something special about it, but we talk to sheep farmers regularly on the programme and it's not worth shearing a yoke. You won't get the price of the shearing for the fleece. Yet we hear alpaca wool is where it's at. So what differentiates it?
Well, it's finer than cashmere. And remember, like, farmers in Ireland breed for meat. They don't really breed. If, you know, if you want to breed for wool, you're going to breed something like Merino. So obviously that'll be worth a lot more. So we're a food producing country. So really meat. But alpacas are literally for fleece and breeding stock. There's a shortage of breeding stock all over the world. Chinese would like 5 million alpacas, but there's only 3 million in the world. UK have 60,000 breeding animals, roughly. We've only a few thousand, and it's growing very, very fast. Brexit has helped us out because, you know, the UK find it difficult to export into Europe. They can only go through the port of Rosslare to get into Europe. That's the only port that'll accept them.
And the breeding female, you mentioned back at the Tullamore show all those years ago, breeding female was in around 2,500-3,000 euro. What are we talking today for a well-bred breeding female, Paul?
A well-bred female that's proven, say, it's had a career before and is pregnant again, probably make 5,000-6,000.
In relation to the wool, then, is it one fleece you get off them a year, or can you share them twice?
Yeah,
or?
One fleece a year. You get about 4.5 kgs a year off them. We will be shearing at the end of March. So, again, somewhere between March and June, people will do the shearing. Now, again, they have to be done correctly. You don't want second cuts. You want somebody that knows what they're doing. You rope them, you lie them down, you start with the saddle, and you do one side, flip it over, do the other side. Then you'll take off the neck and the belly and legs. But even the waist wool is worth roughly a euro a kg. But the top quality wool, if you have enough of it in the same quality, same colour, you'll get anything from 20 to 60 euros a kg.
Right, very good. And where's the market then for the wool at the moment? Is it the continent, or is anyone doing anything with it here in Ireland?
I used to sell it out to Eastern Europe, but now there is a Two Rivers mill up in Coleraine. Came back from the UK last year. They're well set up. They're going to be at the show on Saturday and on Sunday. They'll give a little bit of a demonstration. You'll see their product, so you can go and get that processed up there. Now, you know, if you get it processed, all of a sudden it's worth a hell of a lot more than a ball of wool. It's probably worth 120, 130 euros a kg. Again, we're trying to do a group, and they're open for us to do that, to gather, you know, instead of sending off 20 kgs is what their minimum would be, to do 100, 150 kgs of the one colour of the one micron, roughly between 18 and 22 microns. And we get a much bigger discount on that. So that's what we're working out with them at the moment.
Yeah, and you mentioned as well, we were speaking for a moment earlier about the possibility of an alpaca, an Irish alpaca tweed. That's a really interesting angle.
Yeah, so if the Two Rivers Mill is a worsted mill, so they'll produce worsted wool. And that is fine enough to be turned into a cloth. So then they can get it woven for us into a cloth. And then I have tailors in different parts of the country, but especially in Dublin, that are really interested in a type of a tweed, an alpaca tweed, to do like a sports jacket, like a hunting jacket, high-end, very high-end.
Yeah, it'd be fantastic. It should be a huge market for us. Look, there's a lot of information about them, Paul. You're certainly going to have people interested in them, and no better place to go than the show this weekend in Mullingar. Can you tell us a little bit about what's going to be on offer, please?
Okay, so the judging is happening on the Saturday. We're open to the public from 10 o'clock in the morning. It'll go on until about 5 in the evening. It's €5 entry fee. Children are free. But on the Saturday, you'll see all the competition. You'll see the rosettes going out. You'll see the high end of all over the country. On the Sunday, it's more of an open day. There will be alpacas there, and there'll be some pet males doing a little bit of trekking. There'll be some animals there just on show, possibly for sale. But there'll be a whole craft show. So you'll see the hand spinners. You're going to see Two Rivers Mill there. You're going to see people doing the DNA testing, explaining about the DNA testing to help getting the colour right, you know. So just because you breed a black with a black doesn't mean you'll always get a black. So by doing the DNA testing, you'll be able to say that the possibility of definitely getting a black. Then its parentage obviously is important. So it's getting to the stage around the world that all pedigrees will be DNA tested for parentage, especially the stud males. So that'll be going on. We have wool testing then, to show the micron, to show the different traits of a wool. That will be explained again there today, or on that day. There'll be all the crafts on all the different suppliers and different trade stands around that at that stage. So there'll be plenty of food there. Mother's Day, ideal to bring, because mothers and children absolutely love alpacas.
I was going to say, it sounds like a great family day, especially the Sunday, because they are such a unique animal. It's a busy, busy lineup you have, Paul, over the weekend. I'm sure you're going to get a great crowd added. It's in the Equestrian Centre in Mullingar. And I'm going to say many thanks for joining me here on the programme and giving us the lowdown.
Thank you.
Paula Brennan there from the National Alpaca Show, which is taking place this Saturday and Sunday in the Equestrian Centre in Mullingar. And I bet you didn't think, when you were driving by one of those pet farms and you saw an alpaca looking out over you, that the breeding females could be worth in around €5,000. So big business, and with wool anything up to €60 per kilo, you can suddenly see how there is a big market for these. Also, I forgot to mention it to Paul there, but I said to him, if you bought a breeding female, what do you do for a stud? And there are standing males in throughout the country. And I was just asking about the breeding programme, and they are on pretty much all the time. You will breed them pretty much every 6 days. So there is nearly no time that you won't get a female alpaca in lamb. Which I said to myself, wouldn't dairy farmers around the country love that if it was as easy to get a dairy cow and calf now come the breeding season. Now, coming up after the break, we're going to be talking to Sarah McIntosh from the Irish Farmers Journal. She's going to be giving us information about the amount of people who are travelling and living in Australia. Over 20,000 Irish citizens applied for work permits in Australia last year, and what this is doing to the employment issues with especially agricultural companies. So stay tuned for that.
Country Life on Midlands 103, brought to you by W. Orshaw Burlington Business Park Tullamore, supplier of New Holland's tractors in the Midlands, worshaw.ie.
And you're very welcome back to Country Life here on Midlands 103. Now we have Sarah McIntosh from the Irish Farmers Journal on the line. Sarah, many thanks for joining me here on the programme this evening.
Thanks so much for having me on, MJ.
More than welcome, Sarah. You're the Careers and Education Specialist with the Farmers Journal, and we are speaking about, as I said at the start of the programme, you'd want to be living under a rock to not be aware that an awful lot of young people are moving to Australia. You looked into this in a little bit more detail for the paper, and can you tell us what you found out, Sarah, please?
Yeah, so in 2023, there was 21,000 Irish citizens granted visa to Australia. So we're definitely seeing a big surge, and it was 105% surge in applicants. So I'd know about yourself, MJ, but a lot of people my age group, it's all the talk at the moment. It's not even, are you going to be going abroad? It's when are you heading over?
Yeah, I'm a little bit past it, Sarah, but I am definitely familiar with the amount of people that are going, because you talk to maybe somebody in that bracket of 20 to 25 maybe, and they are coming back and saying to you that literally their entire group of friends now live in Australia. It's kind of mad.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I think most young people see it everywhere in all parts of Ireland at the moment. Everyone is heading abroad, and it's putting a huge stress on the agri-job sector as a result of graduates moving abroad too, because there's a shortage of highly qualified candidates. They're in good jobs and good positions, and they're heading away. And you know yourself, like, it's normal to go travelling for a year or two and come back. But I think due to COVID and other circumstances, we're seeing a huge increase in the numbers heading over this year.
Yeah, and especially then from an agricultural perspective, you would have always had a lot of people involved in farming, be it tillage, machinery, or indeed dairy, milking cows, that would go to Australia for, as you say, a year for experience. But now they're staying on longer and longer. And again, that's adding to the dearth of potential employees in pretty much all aspects of agriculture now.
Yeah, I think every aspect of the sector is feeling the pinch in terms of labour shortages. It's a real employees market at the moment. And I suppose with the cost of living in Ireland, a lot of people are living at home. They can't afford to move out. So, you know, when you're faced with that, and you can move abroad and maybe move out and earn a bit more money. But also there's a lot of people over there in Sydney at the moment, and apparently it seems to be full up too. So who knows if the grass is always greener on the other side, but there's definitely an increase in the numbers going over at the moment.
Yeah, well, as you said, look, 21,525 is what it is for 2023. And like, it is huge, huge, huge numbers. No question about it. I suppose employers over here, especially the ag companies or the larger companies, like, they probably have to look a little bit at their pay structure and their benefits and whatnot in order to keep talent here in the country.
Yeah, definitely. It's just such a competitive market at the moment, and they're not only competing with people internally in the agri-food sector, but you're also competing with other sectors as well. So they're having to look at their the structure and the offerings, as well as diversity, inclusion and other aspects too, because employees are coming in and asking, what am I going to get for working in this company, or what experience are you going to give me? So it really is an employees market at the moment. So they're definitely having to adjust and change, and I hear that an awful lot with the companies that I talk to.
And as I said at the start, you are the careers and education specialist with the journal, Sarah. Something we covered earlier in the year, no, I mean last year at this stage, was the talk about another vet college opening. Obviously, UCD is the only place you can study veterinary in Ireland. And as every farmer knows, real shortfall of vets in the country, especially at springtime. Talking about opening another one, is there any news or any update on that for us?
Yeah, so the latest news we have is still the same. It's the four shortlisted colleges. So it's University of Limerick, ATU, SETU and UCD, and it's shortlisted for new or expanding veterinary medicine courses. Now, the Minister, Simon Harris, he's continuing to work on this with the Minister of Ag, the Minister of Public Expenditure and the National Development and Reform. But yeah, listen, like I think across the country, especially in rural Ireland and in the farming vets, it's huge amount of pressure at the moment. And Rachel O'Donovan, one of my colleagues, has a great 2-week series of articles there just looking at the Polish structures and the amount of Irish going over to Poland to study veterinary, and their system places a lot more emphasis on entrance exam rather than the point system as well.
Yeah, which is good to hear, because sometimes the best vets could be people who may not be academically, you know, top, but they might be excellent animal husbandry skills and being physical and whatnot. So it's a total package. One other thing when I have you, Sarah, is you did some interesting research on the decline of students studying ag science at leaving cert level. And it seems to be going down each year.
Yeah, listen, I did a 2-week series on that. I was in touch with IASTA, and a lot of ag science teachers have a lot of concerns around the new syllabus design and structure. And what they're seeing is there are a slow decrease in the number of students, and it'll have a knock-on effect definitely at the number of students going into college to do ag, but also then coming into the sector from an employment part of view too. So we did our own survey, and out of 112 teachers, 76% of them said that they are seeing a decline since the new syllabus was brought in.
Yeah, I believe there's a new kind of a project, and it's turning people off it a little bit.
Yeah, it's very much more an individual kind of structure for the project. It's the IIS, and the teachers are having to kind of do 20 projects in the class, and there's just not a lot known about it, I suppose, but it's a lot more work. So there is a decline in the number of H1s that got ag science last year compared to the other science subjects as well. So that's having a bit of an effect on students there too. But yeah, the IIS project, I think it's good to do individual work, and they're definitely getting a lot of experience that will stand to them at college and at researching level and stuff. But for the weaker students, I suppose, they find it extremely difficult.
Yeah, and sometimes young farmers mightn't be the most academic, and they'd head for ag science because they like the hands-on aspect of it. And then if you're being thrown in, having to do a project on your own, it's probably going to turn you off. So it's a bit counterintuitive, really. Sarah, that is all I have time for this evening. I'm going to say many thanks for joining me, and a great rundown there on those topics. And we will speak to you again on the programme.
Perfect. Thanks so much for having me on, MJ.
More than welcome, Sarah McIntosh from the Irish Farmers Journal. And that brings me to the end of this evening's programme. And for once, I'm within time. That rarely happens. And I would like to thank everybody who joined me over the course of the last hour. Sarah McIntosh there from the Farmers Journal. Just before that, we spoke to Paul O'Brennan about that National Alpaca Show taking place in Mullingar this Saturday and Sunday. Michael Hennessy from Chagas told us about the Crop Report platform. You can download it on the App Store, and it'll help you with your tillage decisions going forward. And John Murphy from the IFA talked about the changes in nitrates, the big one being that slurry movement from farm to farm is going to have to be reported within either 4 or 7 days, and that's going to open up a plethora of inspections. So farmers love to hear that. Just what we need, more people coming in around the farm looking for problems. Now, I will speak to you next week, as always, 7 p.m. Wednesday evening. Shows repeated Sunday morning at 7 a.m. And wherever you get your podcast, the programme will be up in the next couple of days. Just type in MJ space Cleary, C-L-E-R-Y, will pop up. We'll talk to you in a week. Good night and God bless.